Thanks for that introduction. So I'm actually going to take us back up to the state level and really even the national level and talk about our experience in California with menu labeling law and also take you from this small community environment of independent restaurants to the big chains. So kind of a transition from the previous presentation. So I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to acknowledge the funders for this work. So I'm doing this work in my dual role as a fellow at the Party Rand Graduate School and also as an analyst at the Rand Corporation. This project has been funded by RWJ through its Healthy Eating Research Program and also with some dissertation grants from the JO Foundation and also the Rothenberg Dissertation Award at the Rand Graduate School. And I'd also like to thank the Food and Nutrition section for acknowledging this work. So everybody in this room is aware about the menu labeling laws that have gone into effect in the past 2 years. There's been a lot of policy activity in this area, and restaurants, of course, have to pay attention to what's going on with this. The research that looks in the field at the effects of menu labeling on consumers' behavior doesn't find a huge effect, right? I mean, some of these studies find that there's no significant effect, and others find a pretty marginal effect. I was interested in looking at the supply side effect in the restaurant industry, because we do know that of course, the food environment in which consumers operate has a very strong influence on the set of choices that we have, and thus the likelihood of making a healthy choice in eating. And we do know that the restaurant industry changes very rapidly. It responds to consumer demand. It may respond to policy. But the set of offerings that restaurants are providing us with does frame our possible decisions for healthy eating or unhealthy eating. And I wanted to take a closer look at this because I think the research side doesn't really know enough about what restaurants are doing. So the overall research questions guiding this effort have to do with the restaurant industry's role in the obesity epidemic, taking a closer look at the supply side effect. There are two major components to this study. I don't have time to talk about part one, but part one of the analysis is what we think is the most comprehensive descriptive analysis to date of chain restaurant menu nutrition. So in this study, we have 245 chain restaurants in which we collected about 31,000 menu items, the calories and nutrition information for that, and have done a descriptive analysis of what those levels are, how those levels are correlated with restaurant characteristics, and also how they're correlated with the accessibility of nutrition information on restaurant websites. So if it's more difficult to access that information, is that actually correlated with having higher calorie levels? So I can't discuss those, but part two of the analysis is what I'm discussing here, and that's looking at a pre-post analysis of change in calories and nutrition over the past year and trying to see whether menu labeling laws were maybe partly responsible for encouraging restaurants to make these changes. So here's one of the issues that I wanted to just kind of start out with our research. So the goal is to evaluate the effect of the California menu labeling law, which was signed into law in 2008. The first provisions went into effect in 2009. Those were not strong or visible provisions. So it was mostly had to do with having a nutritional brochure available on site, but not on menus. So those weren't really visible. So we don't think restaurants were making huge changes at that time. We started with baseline data collection in spring of last year, during which time the federal menu labeling law passed. And supposedly, it has not been fully implemented. The FDA is still mulling over some of the implementation regulations for it, but the basic provisions requiring menu labeling supposedly are in effect now. They are in effect the day that the bill was passed, which is a little silly. They're not really being implemented, but some restaurants may already be complying with them. So that sort of complicates my treatment effect of the California law because the federal law does preempt the California law. In the meanwhile, though, what we do see and what we've heard from the restaurant industry in California and from lawmakers is that they are assuming that the California law is still good and valid. They're not really enforcing it strongly, but it is on the books. It is still there. So that's our treatment of interest with those caveats. So our study period is about 1 year from our baseline to follow-up data collection period. So we took our restaurant list from Restaurants and Institutions magazines as well, their top 400 U.S. chains by sales. We augmented it with an additional 125 California chains since we were looking at the California effect and took those restaurants from the InfoUSA database, which just lists the number of outlets that those restaurants have in California. This was a major primary data collection effort where we pulled information from restaurant websites, so their self-reported nutrition information that they had on their websites. and compiled a database with all that, with all those values. The secondary data that we purchased came from a retail database, InfoUSA retail database, which gave us information on the restaurant outlet locations, and also the restaurantchains.net database, which is a market research tool that surveys executives in these restaurant corporations on a quarterly basis to get information about the basic operating characteristics of their restaurants. So we use those variables in the regression analysis. So you'll see more about this later, so I won't go into it too much, but we're doing analysis basically in two ways, with our treatment versus control group for the California analysis, and then also kind of assuming that maybe restaurants saw themselves all in this federal, everyone is subject to the federal law group, you know, so this is an analysis that doesn't really have a control because these are all major chains. They are almost all subject to the federal law except for 10 of the restaurants in our sample. So that's kind of the second analysis. We're looking at menu items in two ways. In this analysis, it's main entrees only. And we're looking at items that either changed or didn't change. And what I mean by changed is that we went back within the same restaurant and we matched on all the nutritional values that they reported. And we looked for an exact match because item names are not really good as a unique identifier for many reasons. So it might have been a different item, but we were really just looking to see whether the nutritional profile of items changed. So that would include an item that was actually the same thing, but it got reformulated or changed in its nutrition in some way. It would include a new item that was added to menus, and it would also include one that was taken off of menus. So those are the items that change, which will be important to keep in mind in the results slides. So we'll be doing a descriptive analysis, and I just have some t-tests and regression results to share with you today. So another caveat, these are preliminary results. We have been planning to be done with this analysis in December, so we're a little bit early on this, but I wanted to share some numbers with you. We're about 80% through with the data entry effort, so that this is not the complete data set, the final numbers will change. But I don't think the qualitative conclusions will change a whole lot. So let me just start by giving you a summary of the findings and the results that I'm going to present. The first thing that we found is that added items, new ones that we saw come onto the menu, were actually similar to those that came off the menu. So we weren't really seeing, on average, a large trend in a lot of healthy items coming on and unhealthy items coming off, which is what you might like to see, but we don't really find evidence for that. Trans fat did decrease in the new items, which is, I forgot to note this in the timeline slide, but in a separate piece of legislation in California, also required that trans fats be eliminated from restaurants on January 1st of this year. So we do want to see that change. Items that changed, that restaurants changed in some way, were higher in calories and fat and sodium compared to those that didn't change at all. And that what that actually tells me is that restaurants, when they were making some sort of a tweak in their menu items, they weren't doing it randomly with respect to nutrition, right? So they were the higher calorie items. Maybe they didn't actually bring on healthier items, but they were doing something that was responsive to nutrition in some way, because otherwise we wouldn't see a significant difference between these two. And then finally, we did a difference in difference analysis, which unfortunately doesn't find any effect in our difference in difference estimator. You know, partially, this may be due to the fact that restaurants knew they didn't really have to comply with the California law at this time, since it is being preempted and enforcement is not really strong. So let me just give you the numbers to go with this. The study population for this current preliminary analysis includes 188 restaurants for regular menu items and 86 for children's menu items. Hopefully you guys can see those numbers in the back. We have about 23,000 main entrees that are represented in this analysis, so a pretty big number. Looking at the differences between groups, you know, they pretty much have the same number of menu items at baseline and follow-up, about the same number of items that were changed versus unchanged. The numbers don't all add up because of rounding on the children's menu side. But the main difference is that the treatment group restaurants, as you would expect, the restaurants that are subject to these menu labeling laws are the big ones. So they have a much larger number of outlets than the control group restaurants. And this number is skewed by a few at the very top that have very huge outlet counts. So the control group restaurants are not completely small chains. They had at least 10 chains in at least 10 locations in California. Some of the national ones had smaller numbers but are very profitable, which is how they made it onto the list. But we do have some large restaurant corporations in the control group that just aren't based in California, which is why they're not subject to the law. So like Dunkin' Donuts, Captain D's, Friendly's, Bojangles, Buffalo Wild Wings, these are East Coast chains, and they're just not in California, but they are very big restaurant corporations. So they're in my control group. So for the first set of numbers that I'd like to share with you, And it's the first time that you're also seeing the mean levels for main entrees for these nutritional variables. So this is my point that the items that we saw that changed were pretty much similar in most of the nutritional parameters than the items that, the removed and the new items were pretty much similar in many nutritional variables. We saw a significant decrease in trans fat, so the new items were 0.2 grams of trans fat lower, which isn't a big magnitude of change, but it is significant. And we did see a difference in sodium, so the new items look like they were lower in sodium based on their averages. Than the removed items. For children's menu items, we saw a larger absolute decrease in sodium for these means. But I'm not going to dwell too long on these results because I took the same analysis and I put it into the regression context and added regression controls. And most of the significant results disappeared except for trans fat. So let me just orient you to the results that I have here. So what you're looking at is the regression coefficient for new items compared to old items. So what's the difference in calories and the fats and sodium for new items compared to the ones that were removed from the menus and follow-up. We started with regression model number one, which doesn't have any controls. It just regresses new items on calories through sodium, those variables. So you're not seeing any significant effects. But even in model number five, where we actually add in all these restaurant characteristics that are listed above it. We include the service type. We have all different service types of restaurants. We included the national outlet count. We did this by deciles because the number is very skewed by a few. Meal periods offered and the type of cuisine. So these are restaurant characteristics that do explain a lot of the variation in nutritional variables. So we see these effects really disappear, including the sodium effect. So for adults, you know, we have really no difference, it seems, between the new and the removed items in sodium. And for kids, that difference was not significant. So the next set of results that I want to share had to do with comparing items that changed in some way versus those that didn't change. And these differences were much bigger, right? So we see that items that changed were the higher calorie, the higher fats, higher sodium items. And the unchanged items were lower comparably. So as I'm running out of time, I'm going to skip to the next slide. Even after adding some regression controls into this analysis, we still find that results actually stand. So we do see that restaurants are paying attention in some way to nutrition when they're making changes and reformulations on their menu. The difference in difference estimator doesn't find any effect. Just the difference in difference estimator on the first line, it's whether the item was a follow-up item and then whether the restaurant was subject to the California law. No significant differences here except for trans fat, which is good because it does show that, you know, there's a difference within California that's being picked up on. So we have some limitations to our study, of course. Some of these menu labeling pieces of research you see have a much more focused approach where they go into a few restaurants and do on-site work. Ours is a much broader approach within the scope of our study. You know, we took website-based information from restaurants, which of course does not perfectly reflect what's offered in restaurants. It's not necessarily updated. It doesn't necessarily reflect how meals are being served, even because the website-based information is not subject to any sort of laws in terms of how it needs to be formatted right now. You know, so that's a limitation. The trans fat variable, there are some limitations in interpreting that because only about 50% of the time was trans fat reported. The other variables were reported more like 90 to 100% of the time, so we don't think that there's as much of a reporting bias on sodium, but there probably is for trans fat. This is obviously a short time frame for follow-up analysis. It's just 1 year. Many restaurants hadn't even updated their nutrition information, especially the smaller ones. They don't do the analysis every year. We're still doing full data entry, which we hope to complete within the next month or so. There are the treatment effects with the California law, you know, not really being complied with, perhaps, or being enforced strongly. And then again, you know, with this study, we're looking at the objective restaurant nutrition environment. We're not trying to make any statement on consumer choice and how that changes behavior and what restaurants are doing as far as their marketing and their pricing. So the main takeaway messages that I have as I wrap up here are that, you know, the trans fat ban worked, but we don't see a big magnitude of change. It's 0.2 grams because I think that pretty much most of the changes already happened. Most of the items that I looked at that were labeled for trans fat were zero. So there wasn't much room for improvement there. Secondly, the restaurants did pay attention to nutrition. So when they were changing their menu items, it wasn't in a way that was random or blind to nutrition. Teasing out just the effect of the California menu labeling policy is hard for these reasons that I mentioned before, but I think really my bottom line observation at this point in the analysis is that, you know, despite what we've heard about a lot of restaurants putting lots of new healthy offerings on and really kind of catering to this health-conscious consumer, it doesn't really play out in the data. We're not seeing that new items are lower calorie or lower sodium or anything like that compared to the removed items. So what that really means is we still have, I think, for all of us in the room as public health professionals, we still have more work to do. We still have jobs. So I'm going to wrap up.